Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex,
nationals. Mike and Rick tell you.
Early college, high school. Pain and suffering.
Learning and teaching.
In your face. In your face.
Your
face.
That they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my guest co-host, Howie Schaefer.
Hello, Michael.
How are you, Howie?
Doing great. It's great to be here.
Good, good. Well, for most of our listeners know you as the guy who sends out the Penn News Blast.
Right.
But you recently left the Public Education Network. Tell us about your new gig.
I'm working for an organization called Diversity Best Practices, and DBP, as they're called, is an organization that's committed to helping America's corporations be more sensitive to the needs to recruit minority talent and also recognize the increasing power of the multicultural marketplace. And so it's exciting to go from government and non-governmental institutions and deal with the prodigious power of America's corporations to change, impact, and create opportunity in people's lives. So hopefully that'll pan out well.
Well, you have got the spin down well, Howie. I like that. I like that. Well, so what this means is that you are stepping aside, for at least for now, from the education field. We're going to talk then about your perspective from your time in education, many years at the Public Education Network. I know we haven't always agreed on issues, but we always enjoy the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, our listeners will remember that Rick is, of course, away in Greece on vacation, but he will be back next week. But we're going to go ahead and have our interview first with Howie. Then we'll play a game of Pardon the Gadfly. And then, as always, we will listen to a little bit of education news of the weird. So let's get started. Now, Howie, from my perspective, it's been very hard so far to get the candidates running for president to focus on education.
Right.
And I kind of get a sense just reading the newspapers and the op-ed columns and such that education just is not a top-tier issue right now. Bill Gates, Eli Broad spending $60 million to change that. What's your take? Why is it that education doesn't seem to be such a hot issue right now? And do you think there's any chance of changing that?
Well, I'm not a pollster, but there's always reports coming out saying that there's conflicting information saying that the war is important, the economy is important to voters, and education falls about number seven on the list of domestic and international priorities. But on the other hand, when voters are asked what are the things that they care most deeply about and wish that public officials would care more about, particularly in reflecting that in budgets for school funding and other examples of making it a greater public priority, they always cite schools. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of a gap between people's talk and people's action. And when people go into the ballot box, even though they say that they'd vote for an education candidate, you never really know what happens in that little magical democratic space. I think that this is an exciting campaign, but the jury's going to still be out. It really depends on the implementation of the campaign. You know, as you know,
you're talking about the Ed in 08 campaign.
Yeah,
the Gates Ed in 08
with the $60 million. I mean, that's very, very substantial investment. We know so far from the Republican and Democratic debates that have been held so far that education has been barely mentioned. Yeah. Bill Richardson on the Democratic side was one of the people who was gave it a fleeting mention. And on the Republican side, people only mentioned education in the context of No Child Left Behind. Right. And that has its positives and its drawbacks as well, too.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, don't you think there could be some fatigue setting in that people are just kind of tired of education because of No Child Left Behind? We've done education. They're ready to move on to something else.
Well, NCLB has monopolized the debate to some extent, so I don't know if there's fatigue. I think that people really don't understand it. And the Public Education Network did a whole bunch of hearings where people said that they believe in principle with the goals of No Child Left Behind, but and then you explain to them what it really means, and they go on to say they would either need more information to have an informed opinion, or they just don't like the over-reliance in their belief on testing and really the lack of parental engagement, which is a big piece of people's mm-hmm. disappointment with NCLB is the lack of oversight and accountability around those parental engagement mm-hmm. components of the legislation.
Okay. Well, hey, you know, by stepping away from education, at least you don't have to spend all of your time on No Child Left Behind anymore. I know that some of the rest of us are getting a little tired of it. All right. Let's talk a little bit about school funding.
Right.
Public Education Network was always a very strong advocate for increasing funding for schools, as
right.
were you. What's your basic point of view, that our schools are just vastly underfunded today, that more money will make a big difference?
Well, man, we don't have time to go into this doctoral dissertation. My sense around the funding issue is that there's just enormous complexity in it. And for people to take these sides of, you know, more money, less money, at this point in time is a really not a very helpful debate. Because even the public has a more sophisticated view. People, when polled, say, if we were to charge you higher taxes and that money would go into a lockbox and it would only be spent on education, would you vote for higher taxes mm-hmm. for public schools? And people say yes, with a vast majority. The reality is that we know that that money will never be secured. It may never end up right. in the hands of educators. And even when the money gets poured into the system, you folks have been wonderful at pointing out all of the inconsistencies, the lunacy, the craziness, the waste. You guys are famous for, you know, making, you know, bureaucracy sound like a dirty word when it, you know, passes people's lips, et cetera. But it's because it reflects some of the truth of the wastefulness. And if we want to inspire the confidence of the American people that their money is being spent well, schools are going to have to get their act in order. But more money does need to be spent on instruction. More money does need to be spent on special education. More money needs to be spent, billions and billions of dollars. I don't have the fact at my fingertips. But okay. on school construction alone, we're asking kids to go to school in places that are unhealthy and unsafe. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of the American public agrees that that sure. is a tragedy and a national sure. shame.
But talk about bureaucracy, right? Trying to get that money to actually go to building good schools and not just to lie in the pockets of contractors.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, okay, so let's talk about a particular kind of funding and fundraising then. Something that we see more and more in some cities, certainly here in Washington, D.C., is this private fundraising. Mm-hmm. There's schools here in Washington, D.C. that raise, I think, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars for their schools. These are in the wealthy parts of town.
Millions.
Millions, even. They use the money to hire art teachers and music teachers and the like. Is this another form of inequity, or is this okay?
It's a complicated question again. There was a study that was done of school funding that showed that when you average out across all the kids in the district, how much does it come out to per capita? Even the schools that raise the most money tend to raise about maybe $200 per kid per classroom in some of the school districts that do this work the best. That's enough to buy a couple of laptops for a classroom or to advantage them in some significant ways. But it's not at this point in time such a severe problem that we need to go and, let's say, have a government solution to the problem. I think that people who are involved in this work are being really careful about how they raise this money and where it goes. The question is, where does it go? And in the past, people have always raised money for public education, whether it be a bake sale or whether it be an apple for teacher. The average American teacher, for example, spends $700 out of their own pocket to buy supplies and equipment that aren't supplied by the schools. So we're seeing more and more money being targeted, not into the extras and to some of the boutique things, but into the basics. And you mentioned mm-hmm. paying for teacher salaries. You meant other things like computer labs, computer equipment. Mm-hmm. That is dangerous as a trend because what happens is that the public responsibility to fund public education gets eroded.
Right.
And now, so we're mm-hmm. most concerned that people understand that public education is a public responsibility in a democratic society. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we have to make it a higher public priority, a la Broad and Gates and other people who care deeply about it. But that's where we want to lean, is on the public responsibility side of the equation, not the private initiative. There's an important role for it, but sometimes it lets people off the hook.
Okay, good, good, good. Well, we're going to talk about that line between public and private some today. Very interesting, Howie. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. We're going to shift into, pardon the gadfly, into a full-on debate here about some of the hot topics happening this week. Christina, why don't you get us started?
All right. Topic one. Vallis left Philly all in a huff, and lots of people are saying that he didn't do such a great job as superintendent. Are even the best soups simply ineffective in the face of big district bureaucracy?
Well, this is an interesting topic. Vallis also left Chicago with a whole bunch of people accusing him of having toilet paper stuck to his shoe. And so leaving Philly in the similar way is... It's not a situation that I'm scrambling for words here. I guess I'm trying to say that Vallis is not a guy who's afraid to be unpopular and to be the enemy of what he perceives to be entrenched constituencies in the places where he's gone into. So he leaves having teachers, having parents, having other administrators be angry at him. I wonder what's going to happen in New Orleans. New Orleans is such a dynamic reform environment right now, heavily focused on charters, trying to serve tremendous amounts of disadvantaged kids. The role of a celebrity superintendent down there has yet to be played out.
Right. I mean, this is part of the great man theory of education reform that we're going to send Paul Vallis in to fix these systems. I mean, you look at Chicago and you look at Philadelphia, I think, you know, he did make some significant progress there. But whether or not he was able to defeat the entrenched interests over the long term remains to be seen. In Chicago, at least one of his own deputies was brought in to succeed him. And of course, you still have Mayor Daley in control of the schools. And so I think you've continued to see reform and progress in Philadelphia. Hopefully that'll be the case with the School Reform Commission that's appointed by the state and that controls the district. If they can continue to keep pushing this agenda forward, that'll be an interesting model. What I think is clear that doesn't work is just to have a superintendent come in for 5 years and then leave without having any kind of system to keep it going. All right, Howie, you're really good at this.
I think the national tenure of a superintendent's a lot less than 5 years, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Scary. Okay, Christina, what's next?
All right, hearkening back to the whole public-private issue, a commentary in Ed Week is in favor of religious-seeming charter schools. Mike, when do such schools cross the line?
Well, you know, I think this is an excellent idea. You know, listeners know that I am a big supporter of charter schools. I'm not as crazy about some of the voucher programs out there because I think that private schools and voucher programs should be held accountable for results. Well, here you have a great mix. You know, you can have a system where you have schools that are accountable, but that can teach religion, which of course is one of the great benefits of voucher programs, is that you've got lots of Catholic schools out there, especially that have done a great job teaching poor kids and minority kids for a long time, you know, but they can't participate in charter school programs right now. If we could find a way to open the door to those kinds of schools coming in, being willing to be held publicly accountable so they can get public money, I think it's a real win-win.
I agree with you, but the big key in what you said is, are they willing to be held publicly accountable? And a lot of them aren't, and a lot of them attempt to game the system, both in terms of their enrollments. You know, we've seen the problems with KIPP and dropouts and other issues like that. I mean, those are sidelines to this issue. But charter schools are the new frontier, and to expect them to be perfect, I think, is unfair. I was late to the charter school party. I wouldn't say that I'm a big fan, but I'd say I'm open to the possibilities that they would have. And the reason is because charter schools bring a lot of the best ideas in education to the fore. Smaller classes, greater parent involvement, more specific selection of particular curricula, tailoring.
But let me say something. Okay, so you said something about KIPP, you know, gaming the system, for example. This is based on that Ed Week article from last week, saying that they have a lot of attrition, students leaving. But I think that, you know, if you look closely, there's been some follow-up analysis that shows that, you know, most of those kids are leaving the town, they're leaving cities. It's not much evidence that KIPP is actually trying to kick these students out.
We need to go for round two on that.
I know. I just want to say, come on, Howie. But I am impressed that Howie Schaefer, one of my fellow residents in Tacoma Park, Maryland, the Berkeley of the East, true blue liberal, just said that he has no problem with public money going to religious schools.
I don't know why I said that. I said charter schools. So religious schools, that's a little bit
different. This is a question, religious charter schools.
Okay.
I heard it. Did you? Yeah, Christina, you heard that.
I'm going to plead the fifth on this one.
All right.
Last topic. Howie, Baltimore's new school CEO is thinking of giving autonomy to lots of principals. Is this a good idea?
I'm reminded of Ron Edmonds, you know, the guy with the effective school movement, who said that if you really want to improve schools, you have to have principals who are instructional leaders and not paper pushers and bureaucrats. And so I'm all in general for having principals have lots and lots of autonomy. But in Baltimore, they just canned a whole bunch of principals, and they say they want to can even more of them. And now they're going to turn over more autonomy to these people. I wonder if it's asking the rats to guard the cheese. It seems like there's a lot of opportunities for miscreants there and for low performance. I want to trust the Baltimore principals, but I worry about oversight.
Howie, did you just call principals rats?
Oh, I wouldn't go that so far. It was a metaphor.
I'm trying to get you in all kinds of trouble. No, I mean, you make a good point. And this is why I think the idea of differentiating the kind of autonomy you give to schools based on their performance makes sense. In other words, make schools earn autonomy.
Right.
We know this from charter schools. We know this from traditional schools. You know, some principals can do great work if they're given more freedom. We just want to make sure that we are placing our bets on the right people. If you just cut people loose who don't have the training or much less are out to make a fast buck, you can have a real disaster. But I do see a growing tendency of these superintendents to come in and talk about autonomy and empowerment. And I think generally that's good. I think this is a movement, a little bit of a backlash against some of the managed instruction that we see in lots of big systems where they've said, we're going to have one curriculum, we're going to force everybody to do it the same way. I think this might be an influence of the charter school movement.
And I just want to throw in one of the things that NCLB, I think, has taught us, you may disagree, is that one size does not fit all. And one of the things that we need to do is have some increased flexibility. If this leads to increased flexibility at the school level, great. But if it leads to less accountability, then big mistake.
Okay. Well, very nice game of Pardon the Gadfly, Howie. It is now, of course, everybody's favorite, a time for Education News of the Weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what is weird this week?
At a high school in southwestern Montreal last week, 20 baton-wielding police officers took 3 hours to quell a food fight that evolved into a full-scale riot. Seems that kids these days are using the internet to set up and prepare for such mega food fights. And then they post videos of their exploits on YouTube. It's become something of an epidemic, too. The food fight turned riot was the third food fight in the Montreal area in 7 days. Sergeant Ian Lafrenier said of the incident, quote, "It was a food fight at the beginning, but it finished as a riot, basically. They were breaking stuff. Parents in a park were roughed up and pushed," unquote. Howie, if you were in a food fight, what would be your weapon of choice? 1, individual pudding cup. 2, tomato. Or 3, Capri Sun.
Chocolate pudding with sprinkles, I think. Yeah.
Ah, that would have a big impact. Oh, my goodness. So let me get this straight, Liam. So the kids are like texting each other on their cell phones or something and saying, making plans for this food fight. Is that what's happening?
I think they're using the internet.
Okay. On YouTube, is that? Yes.
The YouTube.
Yes, on the YouTube. Or they're posting it on the YouTube.
That's right.
Okay, yeah. Very nice.
You can check out some of these videos, as I did earlier today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Are they funny? Are they...
Funny to some, distressing to others.
I like that. Yeah.
I mean, how does a food fight escalate into a riot, though? I mean...
I don't know. Was that the whole point all along? I mean, I guess you could really egg someone on.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Maybe the police had to take him into custody. That's not me. That's for the show.
Yeah. That was lovely. That was lovely. Well, I just always fear that my own staff here is planning some sort of riot over the internet to show on the YouTube. But so far, that hasn't happened. So, well, thank you, Liam. That's pretty weird. Not that weird, but
no,
a little bit weird.
A food fight turned into a riot?
Yeah, but now we're at the end of the school year. You're going to have to really dig hard to find those weird events that happen over the summertime. So keep at it. Keep it up.
I'm trying.
All right, Howie. Well, we appreciate you having coming on the show.
No, it's been great. I've been a big fan, and as I say, you've inspired and infuriated me in equal measure. What more can anyone ask for?
Well, good. Well, I hope you keep listening now that you've moved on to a different career, at least for now. And I hope to see you in Tacoma Park. Maybe on Sunday we'll be. I understand what your children enjoy. Banjo Man, don't you?
The Banjo Man. He's a hero.
Yeah, you know, we should get Banjo Man on the show sometime. He's good. He's good. He would be go well with Grammar Girl, and yeah, could do an ensemble.
He's a plucky guy. Yeah,
he is. He is indeed. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week. Who are you, Howie?
I'm Howie Schaefer.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.